My name is Don C, compulsive eater and food addict from Connecticut, as Carol said. I came to OA 44 years ago at age 41, grossly obese, an atheist, and suicidal. I was at a bottom in my life. This was the last stop on the bus for me. But I'm still here. I never left. Last month was 42 years of abstinence for me, maintaining about 185 to 190 pound weight loss. OA literally saved me from taking my life and then showed me how to build a new life of usefulness. At my age, there's nothing better than still being useful. I'm about to be 86 in a little while. You can get a short version of my story. It's entitled Freedom Isn't Free. It's in the Overeaters Anonymous third edition. Another one is in the pamphlet, To the Man Who Wants to Stop Eating Compulsively. I've given service from the beginning, 4 decades ago. There was no choice in those days. It was part of getting well and staying well. I had a tough love sponsor who said, "This is what you're going to do." My newcomer service began with setting up and cleaning up after the meetings, including the kitchens, by the way, since every 90-minute face-to-face meeting had a break in the middle for coffee and meet up with newcomers. I miss those days. My service increased, of course, as I progressed in recovery and became a sponsor.
Don, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but suddenly people can't get into the meeting, and I'm guessing it has to do with the recording, so I'm going to turn it off.
Okay. Tell me, I don't know where I got this, but I got it. One, a sponsor's job is to stay abstinent and help others get and stay abstinent. Two, in the beginning, set goals and expectations with your sponsee. Three, keep your conversation focused on recovery and living in the solution. Four, share your experience. Don't give advice. Five, don't tell sponsees to do something you haven't done or aren't willing to do. Six, encourage sponsees to seek input from other abstinent OAers with the experience that they need and want. Always emphasize widening, in other words, the safety net. Call it the safety net. Talk to other people. Seven, good sponsors are compassionate, exercise patience, and listen well. It says in the footnotes here, honesty without kindness is cruelty. I had a tough love sponsor, but he loved me. So he could tell me, what to do and say, "You don't have to do it, Don. I love you, but if you don't do it, your ass is going to be in trouble." And I said, "Okay." So there's a difference between hardcore tough love and compassionate love. Eight, prepare sponsees to start doing service as early in recovery as possible. Nine, never underestimate a sponsee's ability to get well. 10, carry the message, don't carry the sponsee. I'll be talking more about these points in other literature as we go through, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. Then the 10 commandments of being a sponsee. Again, I don't know the source. One, getting abstinent is probably the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. Be prepared to talk about new ideas, new behaviors, and new attitudes. Open your mind. Two, a good sponsor may be more interested in your welfare than your friendship. Don't take it personally. They have your best interest at heart. Three, when in doubt, try to remember why you ask your sponsor to work with you in the first place. Four, not taking a suggestion because it's time-consuming or inconvenient is a lousy reason not to get well. It's the resistance to change that hurts us. Resistance to change. Five, experience is the best teacher. In the beginning, it comes from someone who's been there. In time, you will accumulate your own experience to pass on. Six, being expected to be punctual and consistent is not unreasonable. Discipline and structure are compatible with strong recovery. Seven, trust in traditional solutions to common OA problems. If it's worked for hundreds and hundreds before you, maybe it might work for you too. Eight, if you're willing to ask the question, Be willing to apply the answer. Nine, if you base your relationship with your sponsor on trust and honesty, you will recover. 10, a good sponsor asks hard questions. When you're tempted to get mad at them, consider where you were before you started working with them. What type of results were you getting with your own eating? Then and now, it's the old, how's that working for you? How did that work for you? You open your mind. So sponsoring is simply passing it on. Our only purpose, right? Tradition 5, our only purpose is to pass on the message to the still sufferer. If I'm abstinent and I'm working the steps, I have something to give. I don't need to have years of abstinence and experience. I simply need to share my experience, strength, and hope up to wherever I am in recovery. For a long time, way back, we said 30 days of abstinence, finish the first three steps, working on your fourth step, congratulations, you're a sponsor. We had a candle step-up ceremony in those days, introduced people as new sponsors, and presented them with coins a long time ago. Thereafter, they would always introduce themselves at every meeting as sponsors. This demonstrated to people that the program works. In the same way, identifying and celebrating abstinence gives hope to the newcomer or still suffering. So identify sponsors, identify abstinence. This proves to those newcomers or the people that are having trouble that it works. Abstinence and sponsorship need to be enthusiastically celebrated. There was another list developed in a large workshop back in 1999. They called it a sponsee wish list, subtitled Top Characteristics of Effective Sponsors. I like this also. It was published in Lifeline, I think in 2000 or 99, something like that, which is probably where I got it, but I'm not sure. Here are the 15 characteristics that they listed. One, remember we're talking about a sponsee wish list, top characteristics of effective sponsors. One, abstinent. The sponsor is abstinent, and abstinence is the most important thing in their life. I'll talk more about that later. Available. A good sponsor has the time to spend talking with the sponsee. They're available when needed for an emergency. They're available for personal contact in addition to the telephone. Three, committed. The most effective sponsors are committed to the program, to sponsoring, and trying to pass on the message of recovery to others. In recovery, the sponsor lives in recovery on all three levels, physical, emotional, and spiritual. They walk the walk as well as talk the talk. Five, program foundation. They have a strong foundation in program principles, the steps, traditions, tools, and particularly the big book. Six, 12-step based. The sponsor has knowledge and experience in working the steps. They try to apply the steps to everyday living. We'll talk more about that. Seven is focused. Sponsor keeps the daily phone call with the sponsee focused on the steps and the program rather than on social things. Eight, good listeners. Effective sponsors are good listeners. Nine, clear expectations. From the beginning, the best sponsors set out clear expectations, limits, and goals for the sponsee-sponsor relationship. I'll talk more about that. 10, shares experience only, as I've said before. Truly effective sponsors know their limits. They do not play God. They do not play therapist. They do not play counselor or social worker. They share their program experience only. 11, humility. Good sponsors know when to say, I don't know, or I have no experience in that, or, well, maybe this is a situation where you might need some help outside the 12-step rooms. They don't allow themselves to be put on a pedestal. 12, honesty. The best sponsors are rigorously honest, both about themselves and with the sponsee. They do not enable. Their approach tends to be compassionate, tough love. I love that expression, compassionate, tough love. I was talking about that a moment ago. 11 or 13, I should say, supports and encourages. Effective sponsors help sponsees grow. learn to do new things, take risk, and learn from their mistakes. 14, attitude. Good sponsors demonstrate compassion, especially empathy and patience, a sense of humor, and a positive attitude about life. 15, know when to let go. Good sponsors know when and how to detach with love and let go of sponsees when it becomes appropriate. Now, that's a long, maybe tough list, but remember, it's a wish list. So it sets out this is the best of the best. So, food for thought for you guys. Now, let me give you some general suggestions for new sponsees, new sponsors, from the literature and from my own experience over the years. Sponsors are guides on how to get absent and how to work the steps. Guides. Without sponsors, people end up trying to do it themselves. I bet there's how many? 55 people here who would say, no, it doesn't work if you do it yourself, right? We can't do it ourselves. We need others. That was one of my big deals when I came to the program. My father always said, real men don't ask for help, Don. What is this crap? Well, guess what? I did need help. Another one, your experience is your foundation for sponsoring. Share your experience up to where you are in the program. But remember, that's your experience, not necessarily theirs. Theirs may be different. Point three, live the steps and use the tools yourself. You can't give away what you don't have. Be honest and open about your own program with your sponsees. Share your successes in hard times. Four, explain to a new sponsee what you're going to do, and this is important, then do it. Explain that our food problem is usually a symptom of a deeper problem, how we look at life and deal with life's issues. Explain that the process of working the steps is about honestly looking at ourselves and changing those things in ourselves that are counterproductive to facing and enjoying life. As a result of these changes, physical, emotional, and spiritual, we no longer need to use food for comfort or escape. Explain that your sponsorship is to guide them through this process of change that you yourself went through. You know, from 10,000 feet, the steps are, this is a two-step program. One is put down the food, two is change in order to get the power to keep it down. That's really what it's about. If you don't have the power to keep it down, it's because you haven't changed enough, or you got lazy and you're not doing 10, 11, and 12. Five. Explain to a new sponsee what their responsibilities are. Agree on exactly what you will do and what they will do on things such as food plans, calling, reading, writing, etc. Whatever path you choose, make sure that there's agreement between the two of you so that you understand exactly where you're going and what you're doing. Six, sponsoring people with the same manifestation of the disease often works better. Bingers, anorexics, bulimics, restrictors, gender, etc. So, for example, as a binger and overeater, I don't sponsor anorexics or restrictors. I certainly have sponsored women and other things, but I can't really identify with the anorexics or restrictors. Sometimes, maybe the bulimics. Seven, don't expect success and don't fear failure. We do 12-step work to give what we have so that we can keep what we've been given. We're not sponsoring or telling our story to newcomers to get them abstinent, nor to keep them in the program. We sponsor to keep what we have. Underscore that. We sponsor to keep what we have. That's the right motive. This motive will keep our pride out of the way and prevent many heartaches and disappointments when some of our sponsees choose not to accept the gift of the program. Five, beware expect six, I'm sorry, eight, beware expectations. Don't predict who will make it and who will not. Don't expect success and don't fear failure. Sponsee success is up to them, not you. We know the program works if people have a willingness to take the action. Not everyone does. Not everyone has that willingness. That's not our fault. Unfortunately, sometimes the willingness comes from, you know what? Pain. You got to have the pain, enough pain to say, okay, I surrender. What do I do now? 10, don't give professional advice. We talked about that before. We're not doctors, therapists, clergymen, or family counselors. 11, don't avoid or apologize for the mention of God or higher power when we're first explaining the program. Remember, Appendix 2 of the Big Book that describes spiritual awakening as personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. Emphasize that the problem and the solution are physical, emotional, and spiritual. It didn't say religious. I came here as a hardcore, angry, bitter atheist. If I hadn't been pointed to Appendix 2 that said personality change, I said, oh, okay, well, maybe. So I stuck around. Otherwise, I was ready to get out the door. Don't make promises. The only thing we know for certain is that if someone follows the program, they will stay abstinent and they will find recovery. Don't forget that sometimes the initial abstinence from the numbing and comforting effect of compulsive overeating may mean feeling more pain when you put the food down. But as long as they are working the program completely, they can remain abstinent and serene in spite of problems. So that's my sponsor used to talk about this as a race. All right, you're going to get sober, Don. We're going to give you 2 to 3 weeks to get sober, get the crap out of your head, clear your mind, and then we'll dig into the steps. But you got to get abstinent before we head for the steps. Okay. Well, sure enough, I started even feeling more pain because I was taking myself off, in my case, sugar drugs. 4, share your struggle if you struggle. Don't allow yourself to be put on a pedestal. Let your sponsee know that the disease is arrested, but it's not cured. And you're only one bite away. Don't be selling or dictating instead of sharing your experience up to where you are on the program. Tell them what has happened to you and how you've gone through the steps and worked the program. We all know our own story. Don't sponsor too many people. One may be enough for some, 3 or 4 may be okay for others. We should sponsor only that number to whom we can give our full attention. As people of extremes, beware of burning yourself out 12-stepping. I've seen it happen. At one time, I had 6 or 7 people I was taking through the steps. Insane. Insane. Crazy. We can overdo it by taking ourselves away from our family too often or wearing ourselves out to the point of setting ourselves up to eat again. If you give the program as it's written, you will be giving your newcomer a great gift while at the same time holding on to the gift. 18, don't predict who will make it and who will not, as I've said. 19, live in your own program to the best of your ability. You cannot give it to others what you do not possess. 20, be honest and open about your own program, as we've said. 21, remember the answers to questions and the suggestions for recovery are in the literature and the big book. You don't have to know all the answers, just how to find them and where to find them in the literature. Your experience is your foundation for sponsoring. Share your experience, as we've said, that was your experience. Theirs may be different. Listen, accept, and support. There is no good or bad recovery. We all do the best we can. So acceptance is really important. That acceptance is mentioned at my count 87 times in the big book. Must be a rather important subject. Acceptance, acceptance. You want peace of mind? That's where you start. Acceptance of reality and what it is. Now, let me talk a little bit about an easy process to start a sponsor and how I do it, especially for a new sponsor, to help a newcomer understand the disease, develop a plan of eating, get abstinent, go through the first 3 steps. This process gives the newcomer a solid foundation, really important, on which to get into the real work of 4 through 9. They put down the food first. Then they get the power to keep the food down by working the rest of the steps. So here's what I do with a newcomer. I tell them I'd be happy to help them get started so they can better understand the disease and decide if they think they have this disease. That's up to them, or some form of it. Help them understand the 12-step recovery process and help them decide whether OA is something they want or do, since OA isn't always for everyone. Sometimes people stop by the rooms, they're sort of tire kickers. Well, I don't know what's going on here. Let me stop in and see. If he says yes, I say, okay. I explain the process and I set expectations and I give him his first assignment. So, like this, Bill, let me explain how I can help you. The process would be for us to talk every day for a couple of weeks, maybe three. We'll schedule whatever time is convenient for both of us. Timeliness will be important, though. Remember, Bill, since I have other scheduled calls, honesty is also really important. That's not always easy, Bill. I know that. But without it, this will be a waste of my time and your time, too. You have the pamphlet, Where Do I Start? That's going to be like a little textbook for the next several days. I'm going to ask you to read certain sections, highlight what's important to you, and then we'll talk about it on our daily scheduled talks. What we'll do over the next several days is study the nature of this food problem. Midway through the process, you'll begin to understand why we call it a disease. I know you can't understand that right now. You may have identified what might be some specific problem foods or behaviors for you also as we go along. You will have set up for yourself in a little time a preliminary new plan of eating, not a diet. We're not talking about diets. We're talking about a new normal, a new way of eating that's right for you. After following that plan for a while, you'll be ready to start the 12-step recovery process, the steps. You, of course, can stop anytime, but hopefully you'll decide you owe it to yourself to find out as much as you can about the food issue and a way to arrest it. His first assignment will be to actually send him to the Westchester website, oahelps.org, to watch the 8-minute OK OA newcomer video. It's locally produced literature. Secondly, I have him jot down the answers to the 15 questions, which you find on page 1 and 2 of the Where Do I Start pamphlet, for discussion for us on our next call. On the first call, I go through the 15 questions slowly and carefully with him. Don't let him answer a simple yes. Ask him to explain the yes. There's no hurry. This is a focused self-assessment on whether he has the disease. He may not, or he may be in the early stages of this progressive disease, or he may already be a prisoner of the disease, or he may be somewhat in between all those things. He's likely to answer yes to lots of questions. The pamphlet concludes on page 2, quote, "If you've answered yes to several of these questions, it is possible that you have or are well on your way to having a compulsive eating or overeating problem," end of quote. Now I continue through the Where Do I Start pamphlet. I ask him to read sections on pages 3 to 4, You Are Not Alone and Many Symptoms, One Solution, and be ready to discuss those with me tomorrow on our next call. Some important concepts introduced here in these two sections. Food is hurting our life in many ways. We are ashamed of our behavior with food. We're not like normal people when it comes to eating, and that our bodies and minds send us signals about food quite different from normal eaters. This is a very big deal that takes a little understanding and opening of mind of a newcomer. Many of us can't stop after starting to eat certain foods. And even when we eventually stop, we can't stop ourselves from starting again. Many of us have been on 100 diets. I've lost 100 pounds a couple of times. Guess what? What is, and gain it back. Because I don't change what really needs to be changed. Remember, food is the symptom, not the real problem. We have a condition of mind and body, the section says here. It's an illness for which OA offers a solution. We have found a way to abstain from this compulsive behaviors related to food, diets, weight, exercise, and your body image. And so you go through the pamphlet, you'll listen to what they think the paragraph means to them, and then you'll share your own experience. In this process of reading and talking, you're helping them learn the true nature of the disease. This is the foundation for everything that comes after. If you don't truly accept that you have a disease over which your willpower is not worth a shit, you're not going to be willing to do all the rest of the work that you're asked to do in this program. This understanding of the disease will inspire action and keep them coming back. In a sense, once they truly understand the disease, the solution becomes obvious. Once they truly understand it, the solution becomes obvious. My God, if I'm using that cake and ice cream and potato chips and bread like an alcoholic uses alcohol, then I just have to stop eating those things. Oh, okay. That's called addiction. But they have to begin to understand that themselves. The next section defines the nine tools. Go through that with them. Next section talks about plan of eating tool. Talks about we have to have a plan of eating. We cannot treat food like normal eaters. Our body doesn't react like a normal eater. Our problem is not weakness or lack of willpower. We have a disease over which willpower, good intentions, and resolutions are useless. A disease over which willpower, good intentions, and resolutions are useless. Now, if he or she hasn't gone through lots of resolutions and tried, they may not be ready for this. So not everybody's ready for OA. Many, 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 probably the majority of people who walk through our doors are people who have tried everything else. There's a section on developing a plan of eating on page 8. It's the beginning of concrete actions by the newcomer. Some words in there, key concepts. We have to develop a sensible plan of eating in advance. We cannot make up our minds as we go. Normal eaters eat spontaneously. You're hungry, you eat. You're not hungry, you don't eat. You're eating, I've had enough. You stop and you walk away. That's not the way our bodies and minds work. The plan, plan of eating needs to state what, where, when, and how much. We're more likely to stick to our plan if we commit it to a sponsor, me. This is a one day at a time deal. Do not think about doing it forever. You know, somebody says, oh my God, I cannot think of what a terrible thing this is. I can't think of never having any more cake. And say, wait a minute, nobody's talking about forever. Let's just, take this a day at a time and see what happens. And remember, what you're talking about is freedom, not deprivation. Not deprivation, because not having your alcoholic foods is going to lead you to freedom. You won't feel deprived. That's what you think in your head now, but that's not the way it works. When you put down the alcohol, when you put down the amphetamines, when you put down the et cetera, you get free. It goes to freedom, and that's what the steps are all about. Then the pamphlet begins to talk about specific foods, gives specific examples in there of some of the things that some of us have learned that are problems for us, like chocolates and fast foods and cookies and chips and sugars and desserts and sweet drinks and deep fried foods and flour or refined carb products, pastries, bread, and then talks about behavior examples. Eating until we're completely stuffed, rigidly restricting calories, hiding or hoarding our food, needing to keep our mouths busy, and of course, purging excess food. At this point, I ask newcomers to construct a three-column list of every food, beverage, and condiment they eat or drink. Everything that goes into your mouth, I want you to put it on paper. Remember now, we've been talking for several days. We've talked about the definitions of the disease and the obsession and the compulsions. They've been introduced to the trigger food idea with concrete examples. They have a huge number of large amount of information in their head that they did not have a week or two ago when we started talking. They have an understanding of our disease as we understand it. So they should be, and often are, ready to get honest, ready to get honest. Your job will be to review this list with them and help them start working on a food plan that includes exactly what they do not eat and what they will eat. The instructions I give on the three columns, column A, red light, if you like, foods that you know in your heart of hearts are triggers for you, foods that you often eat too much of, foods that you never have just one of, foods that you consciously or unconsciously turn to when your feelings are particularly unpleasant or pleasant. Celebrate with this. Celebrate. Let's go to Dunkin' Donuts and celebrate. Comfort foods. Column C, I go A, C next. That's the green light column. Foods that clearly are not a problem for you. For me, that's like a green beans and broccoli, stuff like that. Foods that you can take or leave. Clearly not comfort foods. More often than not, you don't overeat these things. I've never overeaten broccoli, cauliflower, or spinach in my life. Column B, the middle column, the yellow light, foods that may not be, but sometimes might be a problem. So I review the three column list them with them. Keep in mind that initial eating plans often change. There's a section in here on creating a plan that gives them instructions on how to do this. And then there's the next section that talks about quantities, right? In my case, I had a lot of weight to lose, so I had to think about quantities. You know, I just don't say, okay, I don't eat sugar, but I can have 5 pounds of the steak for dinner, right? Quantities are discussed in 11 and 12. Agree on a plan of eating that you come up with them. Have them begin to follow it. Remember, this is their plan, they own it. This is important. They have developed this plan, not you. They have ownership. I didn't give them a plan, and it's not a diet. They're working toward a new way of eating, a new normal that's right for them. I, of course, will share my experience on this stuff, but this plan is their plan. It's a good idea at this point for the newcomer to commit their plan to you each day, be it in writing or verbal. Commitment increases probability of success. It's also a good idea for now if they weigh and measure in order to learn the portions that will eventually get them to a healthy body weight. Encourage them to go to meetings and then begin making phone calls to other OAers that they meet in meetings. If I have 100 pounds to eat, that means I've been eating too much. So, all right, what is the right amount? And then the pamphlet goes into examples of different plans and what are the right amounts. You know, so I'm a 4 ounce protein at lunch and a 6 ounce protein at dinner, right? And learned that 40 years ago, and I'm still, you know, following the same thing. I have to pay attention to that. That's the way you lose weight and keep it off, because our weight is based upon what we put in and what we burn off. It's real simple. Start counting days, in a sense, this beginning of following a plan which eliminates trigger foods can be equivalent to detox in AA. Lots of AAs will go through detox for 30 days, their head clears, and now they're ready to dive in to the real stuff. It can clear foggy brains and prepare people to really work on themselves. Meanwhile, continuing the rest of this pamphlet, 30-page pamphlet with the newcomer. After a couple of weeks of committing their food to you, following their plan of eating, including eliminating trigger foods, going to meetings, start them on the steps. Continue daily calls and committing of foods for now. For now. Options, of course, you know these. You've got the new pamphlet sponsorship in OA. You've got steps that you've got 30 questions in there for the first three. The 12-step workbook of OA, of course, has questions, and then the 12-step workshop and study guide. These all have questions for the first three steps. There may be slips. Remember that slips are learning experiences. They're not tragedies. They're learning experiences. You know, how many mistakes do you make when you're learning a new craft or a new trade or a new sport or whatever? We make mistakes. Oh, crap. I'm in the wrong place. We learn from them. There may be slips, so learn from them. Emphasize that immediately telling you about the slip, though, will empower them to get started again. The worst thing that somebody can do when they have a slip is it's like, oh, I'm ashamed. I'm not going to tell anybody. The first thing you want to do is tell somebody. It's a funny thing, but telling somebody empowers you to start again. Telling somebody empowers you to get back on the horse. So slips do not need to become relapses. No, here's the basic inventory I use. Write down exactly what happened as if there was a video camera rolling. Exactly what happened when you did this. Remember that food is a symptom, not the problem. Before we made the decision to eat something that was not on our plan, there was emotional distress of some sort. Go back several hours, or maybe the previous 24 hours, or maybe the previous day before the slip, and come forward. What feelings were you experiencing before the slip? Were you avoiding facing something? What lies did your disease tell you that you decided to believe? Like, one will be fine. Or how did you decide that it was okay to eat? Now, was the problem physical, emotional, or spiritual? So, for example, did you decide, for example, that some binge food was no longer a binge food? Was there some sort of a spiritual problem? Was your higher power, if you have one anywhere, did you do your morning readings and prayers that we have talked about. Moving forward now, what can you learn from this, Bill? What can you learn from the fact that you went over to that party and you just couldn't help yourself and you just went over to the table and just ate for an hour? What can you learn from this? Are there adjustments you need to make to your plan of eating? If the situation precipitating the sip happens again, how will you handle it without picking up the food for comfort? Maybe you need to not go to that party particularly right now, maybe later, or maybe you want to make sure you have your dinner before you go there, etc. Are there spiritual actions you may take to strengthen your abstinence or help this situation if it comes up again? So it's now several weeks later. We've finished the first three steps. We've built the floor of the new house that they're going to construct. 1, 2, and 3 are the foundation. 4 to 9 are the walls, and 10, 11, and 12 is the roof. They can do a lot of work in 4 through 9, but if they don't put a roof on, you know what's going to happen, right? And that's what this passing it on that we're talking about here today is, working on that roof. So my objective is to help people get a solid foundation so they're ready and inspired to do the real work in 4 to 9. This process does that by helping them understand the nature of the disease. Then they understand the reasons why they need to get honest with food and develop a new way of eating, not a diet, but a new normal. The right foods in the right amounts in a structured way. In other words, if you have this disease, you can never eat ever, ever like a normal eater. It just is. Once we have it, we have it. So I'm 85 and I'm not eating like a normal eater. I have my structured 3 meals a day and no sugars, refined carbs, etc. No alcohol, all that stuff. I'm still doing that. That's the way I held on to it. All right. Now, running a little bit behind on time. Let me talk a little bit about the new pamphlet sponsorship in OA. It's a good pamphlet. If you don't have it, get it. Okay. It's a blue pamphlet. It's out now. It's over there. Very good pamphlet. The introduction says, step 12, we need to carry OA's message. It's not optional. There's my, it's not optional. Sponsorship is not optional. It's carrying the message. It's step 12. Sponsors who carry out this step in tradition are abstinent, committed OA members who live and work the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the best of their ability and accept the responsibility to share their recovery with other compulsive overeaters. I'm just reading from the introduction to this pamphlet, and I've already said these things before. There's no choice. If you got it, you have to share it and pay it forward. This is not a prescriptive instruction manual because experience shows there's no one right way to help others, as I've said before. The first big section is the role of sponsorship in OA. Key concepts there: to keep the program, we need to give it away. Sponsors affirm their own recovery by sharing their experience, strength, and hope with others. The sponsorship role is that of a guide. Not a professional, not a therapist, not a doctor, or not a nutritionist. Sponsors share their experience, their own miracle. The relationship has to be based on trust and honesty, a safe haven where people feel, okay, I can get honest here with this person. She'll be okay, he'll be okay, whatever. The relationship asks for commitment from both individuals. Sponsors need to model recovered behavior. Roles and expectations need to be explained before starting, as we talked about before. This is what we're going to do. This is what I'll expect of you. This is what I expect you could expect of me. The decision to sponsor section says we don't need to have completed all 12 steps. We sponsor up to the level of our experience. So the role of abstinence in sponsorship, the next section. Sponsors need to be abstinent, obviously, in order to share their experience, strength, and hope up to the level of their recovery. Sponsees need to hear how their sponsor attained abstinence. How did you do this, Dawn? You've been telling me whatever this abstinence thing is that you've been abstinent for years. How did you do that? Right? You want to be able to answer those questions. And remember that abstinence is not a fat plan of eating. Abstinence is more than following a plan of eating. It can only be reached by living and working the program. Abstinence is not eating compulsively and being at or on our way to a healthy body weight. A plan of eating is a tool. It's just a tool that we help ourselves to go to that on that journey. Just a tool, one of nine tools.
Don,
Next
Don,
time.
10 minutes to the hour.
Thank you. Next section talks about the tools, prevention and intervention tools to help sponsees achieve and maintain abstinence and hold on to recovery. Talk about how they can use these tools. For example, if they're having trouble, are they attending enough meetings? Are they neglecting doing the reading that you have suggested? Are they unwilling to follow a plan of eating? Are they neglecting writing or other as regular service? Are they making the phone calls? Are they doing the service that they can do wherever they are in the program? Do they have an action plan? Those are all tools that we can use on a daily basis to help us move forward. They don't get us well, but they're interventions to help us stay abstinent one meal at a time. Then it goes into talking about plans of eating. It says, plan of eating addresses the physical, while step work focuses on emotional and spiritual. Working the steps and using a plan of eating together lead to freedom from obsession with food and compulsive food behaviors. Working the steps and using a plan of eating lead to freedom. They're together. A plan of eating is essential to recovery, but it is not recovery, as I said. If I only have a plan of eating and I'm not working the steps and achieving spiritual recovery, guess what? I'm in a diet program. I'm using OA as a diet program. And you know what happens if we use a diet program? That's not the way it works. Then there's a lengthy section on different styles of sponsorship. Just some of the highlights. Sponsors are free to approach sponsorship in their own way, depending on their own experience. Sponsors need to explain their approach to sponsees at the beginning. Remember, I'm not their higher power, and I don't have all the answers. Remember, I don't give advice, I only share my own experience. Sponsoring usually covers physical, emotional, and spiritual, but sometimes sponsees want more specific help. And sometimes there are food sponsors. And I identify as a step sponsor, by the way, as I said before. I just take people through the steps and then move them on because that's my long suit. I consider the steps my long suit, able to help people understand them, make them and simplify them. Another point, no matter what the focus, the sponsor has the responsibility to help the sponsee discover a new way of living. I often refer to my own recovery as rewiring my brain. That's basically what I did when I came here. I thought I knew everything. The fact is, I knew nothing. And I needed a lot of rewiring, a lot of bad ideas. And that's the stuff. Dysfunctional ideas, shortcomings, whatever words you like, needed to be changed. I needed a new approach to life and a new way of dealing with things. Ensure the sponsee understands this is a we program, and I don't have all the answers. Therefore, he needs to talk with other people too. Sponsee should understand he can take what he wants and leave the rest. Again, to make a point that made before, there's no one right way. My way on a specific subject may not work for my sponsee, right? I say, this is what I had to do, and it may not work for them. Well, talk to other people. That's what we mean by using the fellowships. Talk to other people about this. Co-sponsoring may be okay, it says, when those sponsors are available. Live the steps. Sponsors need to recognize their limitations. Techniques may differ, but the important thing is to communicate in an open and honest manner. Challenges in sponsoring. I'll finish up this pamphlet. I won't be getting to the other one before we need to stop and do some sharing and Q&A. The big section on challenges in sponsoring in here. Talks about anonymity. Your anonymity and the sponsee's anonymity are whatever you guys decide. In the old days, we said, no, we don't tell anybody, but I don't care if somebody wants to tell them, I'm their sponsor. But they may not want to do that, and vice versa. I don't tell somebody's my sponsee. It's whatever you decide. Availability, they have to be available at the meeting times. Sponsee slips, we talked about sponsee slips before. Learning experiences, be a good listener, et cetera. Ask the questions that it talks about some of those same questions in here. Sponsor slips, use slip. Immediately seek help from your own sponsor. Share the problem with your sponsee and the steps you're taking to recommit to recovery. I screwed up. I did this, I did that. I'm back on the wagon now, not the wagon, I'm back on whatever you want. I'm back on the horse. This is what I'm doing. This is why I made the mistake, as best I can see. Now it's up to your sponsee to decide. Do they want to stick with you, or do they want to go someplace else? Their decision, their decision. But honesty is always the best principle. Always, always, always the best. What about if they're making slow progress? Before conversations with some sponsee about they're not working hard enough, they're not doing this, they're not doing all the homework that I asked them to do, etc. Before a conversation about they're going too slowly, the sponsor needs to assess their own program for possible issues. Look at myself here before I point the finger to them, right? It's the old thing. I'm pointing the finger at them, but three point fingers may be pointing back to me. Not always, but sometimes. So the pamphlet suggests that I look at that. Are my expectations too high? Is the sponsee being allowed to go at their own pace? Remember, sponsors are not responsible for the sponsee's disease or the recovery. The sponsor carries the message, not the person. A sponsor serves as an example and offers encouragement. Has the sponsee's program faded for some reason? Has the sponsee dropped helpful practices that keep them working the steps, like cutting back on meetings or stop using the other tools? Has either person been less available recently? Or has communication become difficult for whatever reason between the two of you? So the point is, and there's more points on here, but you get the point. Look at yourself to see if you got anything in to have to do with this relationship that doesn't seem to be going quite well. Look at yourself. What about ending the sponsor-sponsee relationship? Whole section in there on this. Key points: if sponsee stops calling, contact the sponsee directly and ask if something is wrong. You were scheduled for a call. Didn't call. Okay. Contact them, text them, whatever. Something wrong. We were scheduled for 8 o'clock. Sponsee decision to leave is not the sponsor's fault. They may decide they don't hire the disease or are unhappy with 12-step approach. Oh, by the way, I'm always asked, if you follow up and they don't return the call or the text, do you follow up again? And I don't know, from somewhere in the sky, I pulled down, I'm going to try three times. And if there's no response after three times, that's it. Don't let them go. They're just not interested anymore. But that's just done. It doesn't say that here anyplace. Ideally, we end the relationship if we have to with love and acceptance and honesty, stressing that OA will be here for them and the door is always open. They may be leaving. They may just want to change sponsors. If they're leaving, though, remember, stress. The door is always open. You're not ready for whatever reason now. It's okay. We are always here. How many times have I sat in a meeting and listened to somebody say, I've been out for 5 years. I'm so glad you guys are still here, right? We're still here. They came back. Sponsors may also stop the relationship if it interferes with their own program or their own abstinence or their own recovery. Things can happen. Things can happen between two people. Particularly if it's a male-female, for example. Some things can easily happen there sometimes. Remember that we are each in charge of our own recovery. We definitely are not in charge of a sponsee's recovery. So the conclusion of the pamphlet, I'll quote, no one can touch the heart of a compulsive eater like another compulsive eater. A sponsor is someone committed to helping another member on the road to recovery. Those of us who have gone before have found that sponsoring is a joyful, rewarding, necessary experience, enriching our programs and our lives beyond measure. Fear of not being good enough sometimes causes a new sponsor to hold back. Sponsors don't have to be perfect, just willing. Higher power and the guidance and support of the OA Fellowship will be there on the continuing journey of recovery. There are probably people in this meeting who think you're not good enough. Take a good look at that. You know, you're afraid. As I said, you know, you're abstinent. You've got something to give the people that are not abstinent and need help. So step up and do whatever you can. There's two appendix in this new pamphlet. First one is it's the 30 questions, sponsee questions for going through steps one, two, three. And appendix B is a step summary, right? And it says, quote unquote, the 12 steps are the heart of the OA program and shape a transformational process that leads to physical, emotional, and spiritual recovery. Sponsors act as guides in this process, sharing their experience up to the level of their recovery. For example, someone who is abstinent has gone through the first three steps and is working on the fourth certainly has some valuable experience to share with the newcomer. To take the sponsee through the 12 steps, however, the sponsor should have completed all 12 of the steps themselves and be both abstinent and in recovery. All right.
John, it's 4 o'clock, just so you know.
I'm going to stop there. Actually, on my script, it says break for Q&A, which is remarkable that I got to this point.
Wonderful. Right.
We're going to stop for questions or shares, and we'll see where we go and how long it takes. But I want to give us, I don't want to go past 4:30, because then I want to show you six or seven, I think. Well, hold on. My superior skills are not working too good. All right, let's try it again. Screen share. Okay. You see it? Okay. Helping sponsees stay abstinent. The phone call comes in, they want to eat or are already eating and calling for help. Remember the addiction cycle. Thinking leads to the feelings, which lead to the obsession, which leads to the first bite, which leads to the compulsion, which leads to the binge, hell, which eventually leads to remorse, which leads to resolutions to never do it again. I just described the doctor's opinion addiction cycle. Right? But I put it in simpler words. The idea is to intervene in this cycle before they get to the first bite, or to help them stop if they've already started. So here are a bunch of ideas from our literature, various sponsoring workshops, or simply my own experience. Basically, I'm just going to read through these charts with you. Some ideas developed at a workshop on the I Want to Eat call. Compliment them on picking up the phone before taking a bite. Ask them what happened just before the food thoughts. What exact feeling triggered the obsession? Were you angry? Were you sad? Were you crying? Were you whatever? What can they do with the feeling? Will eating fix that feeling? Ask them, what's a better way of dealing with the feelings that they're feeling? How can the situation be reframed? What's the opposite of this feeling? What's the opposite of being enraged? Oh, accepting. Oh, or forgiveness. What's the opposite of fear? Faith. Okay. Can you try to focus on the solution rather than the problem? Talk to them about the tools. They made a call. That's one of the nine tools. What else would be helpful? What about writing about what's going on? Reading the 12 and 12 or the big book or other literature, getting to a meeting. You know, many times I've been feeling off. And so I just walk into my office and pick up the big book and sit down and I do big book roulette. Open it up to wherever and start reading. You know how many times that works? I would say 99.9, right? By the second page, I've forgotten whatever it was that I was upset about. So that's the kind of stuff that can help. Ask them about their goals. Ask them to do a gratitude list. Read some OA literature together. Share your own strength, experience, and hope on handling urges to eat. Say the serenity prayer together, separately. Suggest they ask for help from their higher power. What other action, other than eating, might they take? How about walking? Exercise? Distraction can often stop the obsession within minutes. Remember that. If I can distract myself from this urge that I've got to go to the refrigerator or to the cabinet, distract myself in some way, the urge may go away fairly quickly. If they've started already, ask, well, can you put down the food just for now? Okay, you're sitting there eating. Can you throw the rest of that in the garbage, or put it back in the refrigerator or whatever? Tell them to get out of the kitchen. Move away from the food. Can they get rid of the trigger foods while you're on the phone? Can you take that pie that you're eating? Can you take that right now? Carry that with us on the phone? Take that out to the garbage and dump it in the damn garbage can? Can you do that? You know, it sounds crazy, but sometimes these kinds of things can help people. Get them to a meeting. Ask them to commit to a meeting. You know, in the old days, that wasn't so easy. With OA's new website, I can click on meetings, and there's a meeting right there in the next 15 minutes or the next 30 minutes. It has them right by the time where I am. I can literally get to a meeting any time of the day or night. That is a wonderful thing. Remind them the goal is to abstain from the first bite, no matter what. When I say the first, not taking the first bite is the most important thing in my life, that is not an exaggeration, because if I do, I run the risk of descending back into hell. How are you going to feel later when you finally stop? Actions before taking the first bite. This is a Region 1 newsletter from June of 2007. I think that's where I got it, way, way back. It's an old piece of stuff I had. So actions to take before the bite. Pray. Ask my higher power to relieve me of the desire to eat. Pray for more honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, and humility. Thank my higher power that I discovered OA. Ask how can I serve OA? I have often done something like that. Distracted myself with thinking, okay, I've got to talk at this workshop next week, or I got to do this. Let me think now. How can I... Review my plan of eating and follow it. What did I say? What did I write down? By the way, after 44 years, I still write my plan of eating every day. I write it down every morning on my journal. I go through it. I write every day in my journal, 11th step. I write down my plan of eating. I write down my action plan. And I write down, believe it or not, my attitude plan for the day. Trying to be positive. Call someone in OA. Ask how they're doing. Call a newcomer. Ask how he or she is doing. Ask how I can help. Call my sponsor. Leave a message if you don't get them. Call someone I haven't seen at meetings in a while. Listen to a speaker recording. Listen to music. Sometimes that can help me. Write someone a letter and tell them what I'm grateful for. Write a gratitude list. Share it with someone else in OA. Write a letter to my higher power about what's going on. Ask for guidance. Put the letter in my God box and let go. You probably can't see it on your screen, but back there on the shelf, there's a red box, and it's my God box. I haven't used it for a few weeks, but I still do use it from time to time. Write in my journal, ask myself, what's my part in this? Are there any character defects cropping up? I do an inventory every day in the mornings. I have a set inventory, many different kinds of inventory. The shortest is one sentence. How was it living with me yesterday? That's my shortest inventory. If that's okay, I say, oh, okay. And I keep going. Do some kind of service. Walk outside and look at all of nature that nature has created. Nature is very, very spiritual for me. Nature is a very big deal. I grew up in the backwoods of Appalachia, and I spent so much of my childhood out there in the woods, out in the fields, just with nature. And I just feel something out there bigger than myself. It calms me down. Clean something in the house, such as the bathroom or a messy room. Do something I've been putting off for a long time. These are all different ways, all distractions, right? This is some ideas from the OAs, from the OA pamphlet, before you take that first compulsive bite. Now these have been incorporated in the pamphlet, A Lifetime of Abstinence, which I have laying over on the table. Remember, you cannot treat food like a normal eater because you have a progressive disease. Don't think about any real or imagined pleasure you once got from certain foods. Remember that food is not going to make a bad situation better. It will only create more problems and regrets. Remember that if you have that first bite, you run the risk of losing control. The disease tells us one will be okay, no problem. You haven't had one for months. I'll just have one, it says. It's fine. It's a lie. There are many, many, many lies that the disease tells us. Remember how abstinence has made you feel in the past, how free it made you feel, how more productive than it made you feel. Use the tools. Go to a meeting. Call an OA member. Accept that we may often have the obsession to eat compulsively. Experience shows us that such feelings will pass. I'm talking about obsession now. Obsession is mental. Compulsion is after you have the first bite, then it's all physiological. It's the neurotransmitters in our pleasure set part of our brain. 9, don't believe the lie that food will make a bad situation better or easier to live with. Eating your way through a bad situation only creates more problems. Remember that every time we face a situation without eating compulsively, it will be easier for us to abstain the next time. Some ideas from the Think First card, setting over on the desk, a little card that you can carry around with you. Alternatives to eating. Use the tools. Feelings may bring food thoughts no matter how long we're here. Feelings will pass. Remember, we get stronger every time we face a situation. What is your plan of eating for the day? I still need a plan of eating for the day. Sometimes it has to vary depending upon what's really in the refrigerator, what's not in the refrigerator, or some change of plans. But I still wrote down this morning my breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Accept that a bite or two will not make a bad situation better. Remember what you lost when you got abstinent: guilt, remorse, and self-condemnation. If I eat, that's what I get. Other ideas? Do you truly accept you have a disease for life that means you can't treat food like normal eaters? That's a biggie. You truly accept. That's the first step. When I work with people who are in relapse, have been out for a while, the three major things that I see is, one, they haven't truly accepted that they have a disease. So they didn't really think, well, you know, not really. So they don't buy that fully. Secondly, they haven't changed enough. They really didn't work on the stuff that led them to the food in the first place. That's 4 to 9. And thirdly, they just got lazy and decided they really didn't have to do that daily disciplines every day, also known as 10, 11, and 12. They didn't really have to do that. Not true. We got to do it every day. There is no cure. We can arrest it and keep it arrested, but freedom isn't free, which is a title of I use on lots and lots of things that I read and write and talk about. Have you forgiven those who have hurt you? Have you made amends to those you have hurt? Do you read and reflect on OA literature every day? Do you accept that you have a disease, not simply a shortage of willpower? Are you rebelling against our program for some reason? Are you trying to work the program alone? For longer-term members, so what step principle applies to this situation? Now we're moving into what principles. Part of my inventory is, how am I doing living in the honesty, the hope, the faith, the courage, the integrity, etc., principles of the steps and traditions. Remember, you have a permanent but arrestable disease, which means you can't treat food, deal with food like a normal eater. Are you working 10, 11, and 12 every day? You're giving service. Are you sponsoring? Do you have a sponsor? What are the key defects you identified? How many meetings a week do you attend? Do you have a gratitude, do a gratitude list every day? And I do. I was born, I think, with a default setting of depression. My family had it. Particularly my father's side and all of his brothers had it. And it just seems to be my default setting. Nothing helps that any more than a gratitude list every day to keep things in perspective. Yeah, I've got this, but look at all I've got. Are you suffering from depression? Have you started eating some of the foods you had previously given up? Do you remember that freedom isn't free? Remember that abstinence brings clarity, productivity, creativity, energy, and self-respect. I'm going to say that again. Abstinence brings clarity, productivity, creativity, energy, and self-respect. While compulsive eating simply brings a muddled brain. So, to be remembered. I'm going to go over this strong abstinence checklist and writing exercise right off of OA.org that can also be useful when you're looking at helping people with coming back or staying abstinent. All right, so let me close. I actually put a summary chart on here. Let's see what it says. Our most basic truth is that working the steps using the 9 tools to assist us, starting with a plan of eating, restores us to sanity. Period. There's nothing else to be said. Everything is about that process. Sponsors are the vehicle for passing on that message. Sponsors pass this on. You guys are responsible. Don't forget, no matter how far along in recovery you are, if you're abstinent and working the steps in the program, you're in a position to help someone who just arrived or is just returning. Hopefully, the process and the tools that I've talked about here will give you the confidence to do that. Remember, sponsors are not gods or goddesses. They're just members working the program, sharing their experiences with others. If you want it, you got to pass it on. There's just no choice. We have to try to help people the best that we can. All right, so I am finished.